In this final episode of the three-part podcast series on the new graduate degree requirement for dietitians, we discuss the impact this change will have on the job market. Clinical Nutrition Manager Angie Haseman-Bayless joins us to discuss her experience as a hiring manager and the trends that she's observed in healthcare facilities across the country. Many healthcare facilities are already experiencing shortages of dietitians. Will the graduate degree requirement help these shortages or worsen them? We'll discuss in this episode. You're listening to Dietitians Only, a podcast from Dietitians on Demand, created by dietitians for dietitians. Let's get into it.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Dietitians Only. This is Sarah Glanz, and today we're wrapping up this three-part series about the new graduate degree requirement for dietitians with an interview with hiring expert Angie Haseman-Bayless. Angie is proud to support a team of 75 talented dietitians at the University of Virginia Health as the clinical nutrition manager. She has called UVA home for 15 years, first serving as an outpatient pediatric dietitian and then later as the dietetic internship director. In her 8 years as a clinical nutrition manager, she has hired over 60 dietitians and interviewed more than 200 applicants. Wow. She has worked with other CNMs to present on topics including compensation and growing dietitian programs, as well as a recent talk at FENCE in 2023 called Crash Course, the Collision of Master's Requirement and RDN Staffing Shortage. So thanks, Angie, for being here and welcome.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. So we're going to dive into our questions. So we've talked a little bit in previous episodes about this education change that's coming. And so from your perspective, can you talk to us a little bit about some of the trends that you are seeing as the clinical nutrition manager and what some of your CNM colleagues are seeing as well, related to dietitian staffing trends over the past few years?
Sure, I'm happy to. Overall, what clinical nutrition managers are seeing are smaller applicant pools. And this has been happening for, I'd say, the past 2 years or so. I remember specifically last summer being a really tough time for us. I think at one point we had 12 openings due to turnover and to growth. And it was really hard to find candidates for all the positions. And for many of the positions, we only had one or two qualified candidates. In talking with many CNMs across the country, this is definitely a trend. Our candidate pools in general are smaller. And the other trend that I think feeds into this too is that many of the people who we are interviewing are new grads who had much of their training during COVID. And for those who did their undergraduate or graduate classroom work during COVID, it looked different. And definitely for those who had supervised practice during COVID, it's pretty likely that they didn't have the same hands-on experience that was offered prior to the pandemic. And so a smaller candidate pool combined with candidates coming in with not quite the same experience that they had in the past has just made for a more challenging landscape in finding candidates for clinical positions who can jump right in to the roles and contribute quickly.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's really good insight. And I know that COVID really rocked our world. And I'm sure that we're going to be seeing the effects of that for still years to come. So let's talk a little bit more about the specifics of what are some of the current staffing challenges. I know you talked about like a lack of preparation due to COVID and just not having the same clinical skills. So when you are hiring, what are some of the challenges that you're seeing?
Sure. So I think the staffing challenges can point in quite a few different directions. One of the biggest ones that comes up with any staffing conversation is compensation. It often can feel like the elephant in the room. Across the country, I've talked to, for the FENCE presentation, I talked to about 30 CNMs from across the country through a survey and many follow-up one-on-one conversations. And many cited the lack of a competitive salary was a huge barrier to finding candidates or when you found candidates to securing new hires. So compensation is something that's evolved a lot in the last 2 years. Many of the CNMs who I've talked to that they had market adjustments. I think the survey showed that over 90% of the 30 CNMs surveyed had either had one approved or were working on one over the past year or two. So the compensation market is changing quickly. Unfortunately, it's a hard area to be proactive in. Often to get an effective market adjustment, you have to have data and evidence that shows that you're behind. So I think that's one of the bigger staffing challenges, both with hiring, but also with retention. As the entry-level salary increases, it creates compression where there isn't as much of a gap between entry-level and those with a lot of experience. And that's a huge dissatisfier, a major retention issue. So from a broad, what are the challenges with staffing? So much of it relates to compensation. There are, of course, other issues that come up, many of them also related to compensation in some ways, you know, whether or not we're offering retention bonuses or sign-on bonuses, continuing education funding. A lot of it does relate to the money piece of it. Another huge piece that we've seen coming out of COVID is people want flexibility. They want life-work balance, not work-life balance. And so if you talk to national recruiters, they'll tell you that if a job is even partially remote, you're going to get a much larger candidate pool. Like worlds of difference. I've heard from national recruiters of 100 plus applicants for a fully remote job. And a national recruiter told me that 70% of their clinical jobs will not have any organic candidates, meaning no one applies unless they're recruited to apply. So you see a vast difference if you can offer more flexibility, such as remote work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's something that would really resonate with dietitians. And I'm sure that they would agree with you that they're looking for competitive salary and they're looking for that flexibility and hybrid type schedule. So that kind of goes into the next question I have for you. So in addition to, you know, a competitive salary, flexible schedule, what are some of the other perks that dietitians are really looking for when they're looking for a new job?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you covered the two big ones there. Other ones that survey data that I had conducted will point in the direction of more autonomy, higher scope of practice, interdisciplinary collaboration. Many people who jump into clinical work did it not for the individual glory, but more for the how you function as part of a team and how you're helping that patient directly. And so, you know, elevated scope of practice, order writing privileges, being part of decisions that are made hospital-wide related to everything from charting to privileges to initiatives in the community that are happening. Dietitians want a voice and they want to be able to see the positive impact that they're having. Often when you're hiring someone, those are harder things to illustrate and fully picture, that it tends to be more of a conversation around the compensation piece and what flexibility and some of those logistical things like parking or benefits, things of that nature.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you bring it up, because when you're going through the interview process, sometimes it feels like you, for the hiring manager and the candidate, you really don't know what you're getting into until you're already into it. And so for dietitians who might be listening, who are looking for new jobs, that might be a great question to ask during an interview is, would I have order writing privileges? What is a typical day in the life? You know, what's the corporate culture, that sort of thing. So I think that's a great point that you bring that up.
Yeah, I would add to that, that it's great if you can ask for a few examples of everyday interdisciplinary collaboration. So what type of interactions are we having with pharmacy, with nursing, with therapies on a daily basis? And does that align with your expectations of that role? Of course, that looks different depending on where you're working, but I think that can be a really good picture of how the dietitian is valued and utilized and part of the broader team. Another piece of that that we've tried to encourage more with smaller applicant pools, and of course, having fewer interns here, is that we have tried to, as possible, invite people to come in and see things on site. You know, during COVID, we got used to Zoom interviews for every position and hiring people without ever even stepping foot here. And we don't have to do that anymore, especially for more local candidates. I just talked to one yesterday who is planning to come observe in a week or two, because I really want them to see what it's like here, in part because I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of the work that our dietitians are doing. I think that's the best marketing tool that we could have. But also for the candidates' benefit. Right now, it is a buyer's market. So people who are looking for jobs have a lot of options, and they shouldn't feel like they have to settle or should have to jump into something without knowing more about what it will look like and how it will actually function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds like you've given some good examples about how other hiring managers can try to meet the dietitian's wants and needs as they're looking and try to be a somewhere where dietitians want to work. So that's great. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of switch gears and start talking a little bit about this change in education requirement. So now that that has taken effect, is there any risk that you would see with dietitians who don't have the graduate degree sort of being disqualified for jobs if the hiring manager is not a dietitian and maybe not as familiar with this recent change?
Yeah, that's a great question. To be honest, it's not one that I have a ton of experience with. In the conversation I've had, you know, both for the FINCI presentation, but beyond that, and some compensation work we were doing over the past 2 years, I've probably talked to a total of somewhere around 40 CNMs from across the country. And I have not heard of that being a concern. I have heard of one or two places that are moving to master's requirement for some dietitian positions or all dietitian positions. I think with the overall shortage we're expecting, I don't think that's something I picture many hospitals moving to, because candidate pools are going to be a challenge, a bigger challenge moving forward after the graduate degree requirement. And so further limiting the pool seems counterproductive to having patients, you know, get the care that they need. I also tell you, so for my team, roughly about half the team have graduate degrees. If you look at the performance of those with a graduate degree or not, I don't think there are differences there. So much of it is about how you function on a team. I understand why we're moving towards a graduate degree requirement, but I think if we take that change and apply it to new requirements to do a clinical job that has been done very, very well by people without graduate degrees for a long time, that's a disservice to our patients. It's a disservice to those dietitians too.
Right. Yeah. As you mentioned, you know, with the candidate pool already smaller, does it really make sense to further limit your options? And yeah. So in that same vein, you know, talking about smaller candidate pools. So I know that we've heard from several internship programs across the country that they're experiencing lower enrollment numbers. And in some cases, they're only filling about 20 to 30% of their open spots. And so the candidate pool that is already small is just going to get smaller, it seems like, over the next few years. It's going to continue to shrink. So with your knowledge or in your experience, is this anecdotal or is this more of a nationwide concern? It's something that hiring managers really need to get prepared for.
Sure. Great question. In my experience, it's both anecdotal and it is a nationwide concern. I can share anecdotally from our program. Our program's been in existence for almost 50 years. We have 12 internship spots. Don't know of a time where we ever have not filled all those positions. This year, we filled one of 12 spots.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This exact same stat, I can think of four other large teaching hospitals that had a very similar experience this year. There are many things that impact it. We are a standalone internship. Our university that's attached to the hospital does not have any nutrition programs. So we're more limited in our options there. And that definitely contributes to it. Not everyone's in this situation, but I could easily name, you know, 10 different programs that had enrollment that dropped incredibly this past year. Now, what's all contributing to that? There's a lot of things, you know, in general, college enrollments decrease. You can look at a lot of different trends there, but very much is a concern, something we're working through. In our FINCI presentation, we dove into a lot of strategies to help with this. I think the main message is we need to bring people into the profession sooner. So talking to high schoolers or first-year college students about the opportunities available in being a dietitian, opening up our doors of hospitals to more observation, more shadowing, more student experience at a younger age, I think is a big part of it. And for my role as a manager, incentivizing our amazing dietitians to go and tell their story to younger students. So we've talked about using professional leave time to go talk to high school students or do career fairs, figuring out ways to provide mentoring opportunities or even brief shadowing experiences to younger students. We're really having to get creative and come up with new solutions there, because we will have fewer students in our doors. There's a lot of data that supports the numbers are decreasing.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any idea why we're seeing such little interest in becoming a dietitian compared to 5 or 10 years ago? I know when I went through my internship, it seemed like only about 50% of, you know, students who applied to an internship actually got into one, and which was a really jarring statistic back then. But now it's just so vastly different. So over the course of 10 years, we've really done an about face with it. So
yeah,
do you have any ideas, or just in your conversations with other professionals, do you know why that is?
Yeah, if I had a guess, I think it'd be the organic chemistry class.
Yeah, that about knocked me out too.
So I did my internship 15 years ago. The match rate then was 50%. You're exactly right. We've done a complete flip. This year, I believe the fill rate for internship positions or supervised practice was around 40%. I think there could be many reasons that are contributing to this. The first one that comes to mind is becoming a dietitian isn't easy. I joke about the organic chem class, but yeah, organic chem, biochem, the early morning food service classes, like it's a tough course though to become a dietitian. Now we're requiring a graduate degree. So that's more schooling, more expense. And we don't have data yet that shows there's going to be a higher compensation level. So what I've heard from a lot of undergraduate program directors is that students are looking at their return on investment. How much school, how much expense, and what is entry-level pay? And at this point, dietitians are not competitive with other similar education requirement programs. We all know many dietitians have left the field to become PAs or even go to NP school. If you look at compensation nationally for those positions, I can see why people see there's a bigger return on investment. And I think students are more savvy than I wasn't looking at starting salary when I was an undergrad. So I think that's definitely part of it. We have work to do. And I think some of that will be driven naturally by the shortage of dietitians. But I think there are lots of pieces. I, you know, many people dive into that nutrition's a really broad field. The fact that we have to know how to calculate TPN and what each scoop size and food service measurement is a pretty broad range to expect a professional to know. And depending on the role you're in, I'm guessing one or both of those pieces of information aren't useful to you beyond the RD exam. So just the breadth of our field, it's what attracted me to the field, the variety, the opportunity there. But I also think that's daunting and might make it a little bit harder to picture what role specifically would I see myself in following this degree.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I know when I was going through my DPD program, you know, we had like a senior seminar class, something like that. And we had different types of dietitians coming in, talking to us a little bit, but still it was a lot of healthcare type roles. And so, yeah, I think if you're interested in nutrition, but you're not really that interested in healthcare, it can be hard to picture what could I do with this degree.
Yeah. And I also think just in the realm of healthcare, there's a huge range. You know, if you're working at a small community hospital where you're doing inpatient, outpatient, you probably know a lot of your patients, you can do more community engagement. That looks very different than where I'm at is a large teaching hospital. Most of our dietitians are very, very specialized in the work that they do. So the focus populations with a focus interdisciplinary team, it's a more narrow, very specific, very specialized position. The two positions I described each have different pros and cons. I would guess most dietitians, if you asked, you know, which one would you prefer, they have a strong preference for one over the other. And that's what makes our profession cool, that we can do so much. But also if you've only seen the very specialized role, maybe you want a role where you have more interaction with the community. Or if you've only seen the community hospital, maybe you want more autonomy, more interaction with that interdisciplinary team. So yeah, it's broad in every sense of the word.
Absolutely. And I think that underscores what you said earlier about having your dietitians go out to high school programs or local universities and try to connect with freshmen and talk about what a dietitian career path could look like for them. So That's awesome that you're encouraging your dietitians to do that.
We have a lot more work to do. I think we're in the preliminary stages of how do we make this functional? How do we help support this? What can we offer students who then want to come observe us? So we definitely have more groundwork to do, but things that we're working towards in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And certainly that'll help to dispel a lot of the myths about what a dietitian is. And you know, we're not the food police. We do a lot of different things. And so I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what dietitians do. And so that type of outreach is just going to help to educate everyone. Even if they don't end up becoming a dietitian, you're just educating the public in that way.
Yeah, that's so true. That's a great point. It also makes me think about some of the work we've been doing over the past year or two, even with candidates for positions. So our bariatric clinic is a place where we've had multiple openings over the past few years. We have a large team there. It's also, I think, nationally a position that's hard to fill sustainably. It's a tough role. And I've had many people who have interviewed with us in general looking at open positions who have said, bariatric, it's not something I ever want to do. Like, I don't want to do bariatric clinic. And I ask why, and they describe exactly what you said as far as, I don't know, they always say food police, but a prescriptive diet and restriction and all this. And I really enjoy having them interview or at least meet our bariatric dietitians who over the past few years have really employed a intuitive eating, non-diet approach, health at every size, context to their patient care to really dive into relationships with food and help people in a way that many might associate more with like a nutrition counseling clinic. But that's happening in our bariatric clinic. And the opportunities there, the power there of that, the connection they make with their patients, I think is inspiring. I think is exciting. I think is very fulfilling when I've covered over there. And going back to what you said about misconceptions, that even within people who have maybe an RD already behind their name, I think there are those misconceptions about what a specific role can look like. And so much is dependent on that specific job you're looking at and how the dietitian functions there, that I would encourage even current dietitians to question their assumptions or leave some space for, this is how an oncology dietitian has functioned during my internship, but I'm curious, what does it look like in this location of this job I'm looking for? Because it could be very different, maybe in a really wonderful way, maybe in a way that would be really disappointing. It'd be good to know that, free from assumptions of what you've been exposed to in the past.
Oh, absolutely. And even, you know, this is what an oncology dietitian does, but this is how I could put my spin on it. Mm-hmm. I could do more support groups if I like doing that. Mm-hmm. I could, you know, be in more involved with, you know, whatever patient screening or whatever that would look like. So that's a great point, Angie.
Yeah. And I love that what you just said there of how I can put my spin on it. That's how you own your job. That's how you share your passion. Something that our outpatient oncology dietitians did this past year that I think is really cool. They started making educational videos for patients. That's not like necessarily novel, but they actually used a patient. They went through all the process to get approvals for it, but a patient demo how to care for a PEG tube.
Oh, that's awesome.
I thought it was the coolest video ever. It was a brief video and it's a patient. It's a true patient demonstrating how to utilize their PEG. I just love how like genuine it is, right? That this is a patient, this isn't an actor, this isn't like stage, you know, this is a patient doing their daily care that they would do. And what a great opportunity for that patient to empower them to educate others and be such an important part of this education process that there are, I mean, in any job, there are endless opportunities to really put your spin on it and make it your own. And you only can see that once you like dive into positions. So when you read a job description, you're not going to see that. The more you can talk to the people doing the job, and if you can get in and observe them, that's when you'll really get to the good stuff.
Absolutely. And just like we talked about earlier, you know, and you just mentioned, if you can get in and observe, ask about what's a day in the life, how would I interact with the team? And even as, you know, dietitians who are listening, as you're going through the interview process, chances are the hiring manager is going to ask you some situation-based questions like, you know, tell me about a time that you were overwhelmed and how did you handle it? Tell me about a time that you had to develop a creative solution. And so those are all your soft skills that you have that you're going to be using in the job. And sometimes, even if maybe you're not super gung-ho about a healthcare environment, if you like helping people, you like being part of a team, you like having the autonomy, like you mentioned, sometimes that job would be a really good fit for you just because of the things that you inherently enjoy and you're good at. And so, yeah, I could go on and on about that.
I love that. What it made me think about, so my background is as an outpatient dietitian. And I think so often when people picture clinical, they picture inpatient. There are phenomenal opportunities inpatient. It can be a really exciting job for many people. Coming out of my internship, it wasn't an area I was interested in. I was interested more in the outpatient or community focus. And like looking at our team, so we have 75 dietitians, 2/3 of our staffing is an outpatient. So when people picture clinical, I don't know that they're picturing the CF clinic that our dietitian works in, or our outpatient oncology clinics that are spread out in different locations, or our dialysis clinics and the really like family environment of these smaller town dialysis clinics where the dietitian is such an integral part of that team and knows their patients so well. I think that, I mean, that's a challenge with nutrition. You often will picture what you know, and it's hard to know what you don't know until you've been exposed to it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Gosh, we could just do another episode on that, I think. So getting back to the graduate degree requirement, how do you think that that's going to impact the dietitian job market, particularly from your perspective as a hiring manager?
Yeah, it's going to have a big impact. We're already seeing that. Through the FINCI presentation, which I presented alongside a DPD director, Heather Cox from Virginia Tech, she presents some great data just looking at the numbers. So if you look at general enrollment in colleges, it's decreased over the past few years. If you look at enrollment in nutrition programs, many programs are also seeing a decrease there. If you look at the RD exam pass rate, it's went down in the past, I believe, 5 years. There are a lot of factors that all point towards fewer candidates. So this graduate degree requirement, which extends the amount of time it takes to become a dietitian, minimally will create a much smaller candidate pool over the next couple of years. Right now we're seeing the boom, if that is what exists, of people who are hoping to finish their programs in December, take the RD exam, and not have to worry about that requirement that hits January 1st. Beyond that, there should be lag time for the cohort that's going to take a little bit longer. So I would anticipate over the next year or two, we're going to see numbers drop pretty drastically. Some estimates are saying we'll have roughly half of the number of people passing the RD exam that we did this past May. It's a huge difference. So cutting candidate pools by 50%.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a struggle. Of course, I always want to jump to, anytime I'm describing a challenge of what we're doing about it, retention. The most effective recruitment we can do is by recruiting the people who we employ every single day. By talking to them about what makes them stay here, what would make their jobs better, how we can help. Those are challenging conversations because often what's being asked might be things that we don't have direct control over. Typically, our budgets don't allow us to pay dietitians as much as we'd want to. If we could, we have to work with hospital budgets and other budgets. But really making sure that we're diving into what does retention mean for our individual team members and how can we keep making progress in that arena. It also means we have to look at things that help with retention, like market adjustments and compensation and retention bonuses. Those should be very regular conversations for clinical nutrition managers always, but especially over the next year or two.
Yeah. And I think retention, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think sometimes retention is something that gets forgotten. And you managers say like, okay, cool, I hired this dietitian, done. You know, and it's sort of like a set it and forget it type of thing, but it can't be so important. And like you said, I love that you said, the most important thing we can do is recruit the people that we already employ. And I think that's a really great way to look at it. So keeping in mind that there is going to be a shrinking candidate pool. So if dietitians are listening, they are looking for a new job, or they're going to be looking for a new job in the next 6 months or so, what are some things that they could anticipate as they go through that process of getting a new job? Mm-hmm.
Eager hiring managers. I think more challenging conversations. I would anticipate that for most people looking in the job market, unless you're very restricted geographically or specialty-wise, you will have competing job offers. For our interns from last year, having more of those conversations about how to navigate that, because often if you're interviewing two places, you might have a preference of which job you would like more. And it happens actually fairly often, it seems like, where that job, the process moves slower. So you get an offer for somewhere else first. So how do you navigate that? How much time can you request as you consider your options? How can you politely decline? How do you balance competing salary offers and effectively communicate that? Those are the things that I would anticipate having to dive into more. From my perspective, it's extra important that I'm being supportive and transparent. I know that there's going to be other jobs out there. It's in everyone's best interest that candidate finds a job where they're going to be happiest and most fulfilled. And so rushing a process or trying to sell something doesn't help, but being really transparent about what the job looks like, what the expectations would be, what the benefits are, who they would be working with, and what those personalities and work styles are like. Those are really important things to be talking about. But, you know, jumping around from position to position is probably the most effective way to get your salary to keep increasing. It's probably the least effective way to find fulfillment in your career. And so the more that you can learn about a job before jumping in, the better.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So talking about all these changes that you mentioned, all the factors and the reasons that are kind of driving this shortage of dietitians, do you think we would ever get into a situation where we would have like a really critical shortage of dietitians that might end up, you know, impacting what we can actually do as a profession?
A great question.
I know it's hard to predict. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. My first thought is I hope not, but I honestly don't know. In the survey I did prior to the FNC presentation, I did ask clinical nutrition managers if they were having to look to reassign dietitian job roles due to not being able to fill positions. And I believe it was somewhere around 30% said that, yes, they were looking at it. We did not dive into, is that utilizing more diet techs? Is that utilizing more RN care coordinators or social workers to really allow a dietitian to focus on the nutrition part? You know, like some of that change could be positive. So I think of our pediatric dietitians who do a whole lot of care coordination, which they're great at. But if there was an RN care coordinator or case manager who could alleviate some of that, so a dietitian could really focus on the nutrition piece, that's a benefit. Yeah, I don't know. I also think I'm in a different situation, and I have a large team of 75. For those smaller, more rural hospitals, I think it's a different situation, and I don't have a good pulse on what that's looking like. I would imagine that it's even harder to fill those positions, and that making those positions look more appealing by stretching as far as we can to do remote care, even in clinical spaces, is happening, would be a guess of mine. And that bigger sign-on bonuses or bigger compensation packages, because they're harder to fill positions, I picture more of that happening. I don't know. I don't have my crystal ball working as far as how critical will that staffing shortage get, but I'm hopeful that we won't get too much worse than what we've experienced over the past year or two.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to wrap up, what do you, in your opinion, because I feel like you're somebody who is very progressive and you kind of get it when it comes to what dietitians want, how do we retain our staff, you know, and how can we kind of cater to them? So in your opinion, what do we as a profession need to do to really move the needle and generate more dietitians who are eager? Well, first of all, more students who are eager to become dietitians, but also more dietitians who are eager and excited to work in our field.
It's a great question. Just to go back to your comment, describing me as progressive or having a good pulse on this, I appreciate that. I will also tell you that I'm still learning. You know, this is an ongoing conversation, and the needs of our dietitian team members have changed. We're having many more conversations about life-work balance, about, for those who are caregivers, whether it's for small children or parents or whoever, how do we help support them in that life-work balance? We all need to still be learning. We need to be listening. We need to be open to those tough conversations. We need to hear the things that might be hard for us to hear. We also need to figure out how to navigate those conversations around topics that we don't have full control over. Just because we can't control the budget about compensation doesn't mean we shouldn't be talking about it. Probably means we should be talking about it more to better understand it, understand the limitations, to hear the needs, the barriers, how do we work through them? A lot of topics that in the past, maybe we've kind of pushed aside because it was out of our realm, we need to be jumping into more and hosting more of those conversations. How we get more people into the field, I stand by our dietitians are our best recruiters. I have one dietitian who is one of our renal dietitians who is very proud of the fact of any student who comes to spend time with her typically wants to become a renal dietitian because she's amazing at her job. She loves it. There's awesome collaboration. It's like a family there. Who wouldn't want to do that? So how do we allow more people to see that? You know, you could jump to, we should be more involved in social media or media work to highlight what dietitians do. Sure, that could be an option. I think more hands-on of, let's just get more students in the door. If someone has an interest, let them see what we do. And also recognize a lot of people don't understand what dietitians do. They think of food police. That doesn't sound too appealing. That these pre-health professions, people who are looking at medical school or PA school or other forms of helping professions, is there something about nutrition that might be of interest to them? I think so much of it is connecting with students. I also think the other big part of this, and it goes back to COVID, burnout's higher than ever. It's why it's part of the reason why we're having staffing challenges. People were burnt out and chose to do something else, or stay home after the birth of a child, or go back to school for something else. We have to be tending to those needs of our current team members who have that passion, who have that ability, who provide such great care for patients, but are feeling kind of burnt out. And how do we help to support them in a way that keeps that fire going so that they can show it to others, so they can share it, and so they can continue to contribute to our profession in ways that often only they can because of their experience and their unique skills. So I think a big part of that is engaging more broadly with the public, but also not forgetting who's right there in front of us and how we can continue to engage them, knowing that they're our best sources for pulling other people into the profession.
Yeah. Well, that's a great note to end it on, Angie. It's really been a joy to talk to you, and I hope this episode will maybe reignite people's passion about dietetics and how they can get involved in just supporting our profession as a whole and our future. So I want to say thank you to you for joining us and sharing your insight and being so vocal and supportive of your dietitians. Angie has been kind enough to give us some resources, which we've listed in the show notes. So just some additional reading. There's some, you know, different facts and figures that you can look at if you want to learn more about some of the staffing trends. And so I hope that you will also subscribe to Dietitians Only so you never miss an episode. And again, thank you to Angie, and we will sign off for today. See you next time, everyone.
As a listener of Dietitians Only, your opinion matters. What do you like about the podcast? Who do you want us to interview next? We invite you to visit our show notes to complete a quick survey. It only takes a few minutes, and your feedback will help us create future episodes you'll love. Dietitians On Demand employs hundreds of dietitians nationwide and elevates the profession with simple yet effective practice resources, like this podcast. Don't forget to stay connected with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.